there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 322. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. I cannot even begin to describe to you my excitement for this week's episode, so we have to get started straight away with our guest, who has a lengthy introduction, and she's just going to have to sit through it. Kelly, you're going to have to sit through it. Kelly Rabke is a singer, a performer, an actress, a Broadway star. Off of Broadway, she's been in The Wizard of Oz and Children of Eden. On Broadway, she is the only narrator that ever mattered in any production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat that has ever been produced, and this is my show, so what I say goes. She played Eponine in Les Mis right there on Broadway, no small part there. She's done voiceover work. She's been on Young and the Restless, and holy cow, are we going to talk about that. These days, you can catch her headlining and selling out concerts all around the world, and she will be performing her show No Place Like Home at the Metropolitan Room on Monday, November 2nd. But first, she is here with us. Kelly, welcome to The Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. I think I might need to hire you.
I've already added it to my resume just with you saying it right there, Kelly. We have so much ground to cover. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so as I understand it, a fellow New Jersey native like myself?
Yes, born and raised in New Jersey, and then moved to the city, and now I'm back in New Jersey again. Round trip.
My parents would like me to come back to New Jersey. I'm not ready to return yet, Kelly. We'll get there. We'll get there. From what I understand, the big break, you know, that big start was in The Wizard of Oz at the paper mill.
Yes.
Tell everybody about the paper mill. There are a lot of folks who, you know, aren't in the New York City area who don't know about the paper mill. Yes, in New Jersey, a very important theater, Kelly.
It is. I mean, I've always said that the shows at paper mill rival anything on Broadway.
Yeah.
They really do. The sets, the costumes, the scale of the shows there, they've been doing Broadway caliber productions for, you know, as long as they've been doing them. And it's a wonderful place to work, and it was an incredible place to get to get my start. Our Wizard of Oz was quite the extravaganza. I flew, and the witch flew, and the house flew, and I got flown into a lot of walls, and but it was really spectacular. And then I got to return to Paper Mill to do Children of Eden. I also did a pretty awful show there once called I think I've blocked it out. What was it called? Up, Up, and Away. It was The Music of Jimmy Webb.
Oh!
But other than that, which was the exception to the rule over there, everything I've ever done there has just been stellar and wonderful.
Now, can we back up a step? Little Kelly Rabke, growing up there in New Jersey, was this the goal? Were you dead set on, hey, I want to be on the stage?
Well, yes and no. I was actually a pretty shy child for a while there. And then I discovered music, I guess, in junior high school. I had a really, really great junior high school music teacher who encouraged me to audition for solos and try out for the plays and that kind of stuff. And then I had a great high school drama teacher who was very no-nonsense kind of guy, and a great high school music teacher who gave me a real love for classical music and
nice.
A real introduction to that. We did Handel's Messiah and The Creation and Spring and, you know, like big pieces. He really, this was not your typical, choral arrangement kind of guy. And so I actually auditioned for colleges as a classical voice major. And I started out at Ithaca as a classical voice major and then soon discovered that opera was not going to be my life, and that I was much better suited, all 5 feet of me was much better suited for the musical theater world. In fact, I can tell you exactly when it happened. I had a rep class where we'd have to, you know, perform our pieces, and I asked one of my friends from the theater department to come sing Suddenly Seymour with me. And when I was finished and all of the voice teachers were sitting there looking at me with big eyes, and my teacher, Mr. Bentley, said, I don't ever want to hear you sing like that again. And I said, I think it's time to change my major. So that's how that happened.
But Suddenly Seymour's such a crowd pleaser, Kelly.
Yes, it is. How could you not enjoy that song?
That's the only way I made tips as a singing waiter was through that song. So that's crazy to me. That's crazy to me. You know, Kelly, I have to tell you, most people, I work at a school. I work at Baldwin-Wallace University that has a real strong musical theater program and have the great opportunity of seeing students make their debuts on Broadway. I don't know if you know this, Kelly. Often when people make their debuts on Broadway, it's not in this crazy lead starring role as you did.
Yeah, I've been very, very fortunate. I mean, most of my biggest roles were in the beginning of my career. I went sort of straight from The Wizard of Oz. Then my audition for Joseph happened literally as I was finishing The Wizard of Oz. I had 3 months, I guess, in between Joseph before I went into Les Mis as Eponine.
Wow.
And then I kind of paid my dues after the fact.
Yeah.
I did, you know, lots of regional theater and lots of workshops of new musicals and lots of voiceovers and that kind of stuff. But it is quite the roller coaster ride because it's not just smooth sailing once you get your first Broadway show. That's the end of it and you just keep going. It doesn't
right.
quite work as you would like it to. But yes, I was very fortunate with the roles that I did get to play. And then I left the business for a long time. I married somebody who's not an actor, and
is that allowed?
Well, it's not really in the handbook.
Okay.
I really follow the rules.
Okay.
But it is nice to have a little balance in your life. And we got married and moved to New Jersey and had a couple kids, and I didn't really sing for like 10 years.
Much coming up now already, Kelly.
I know. It's been a bit of a whirlwind. I have to say, I really could not have dreamt a better scenario. So I kind of got back into it a couple of years ago. My good friend Scott Coulter, who directs the Broadway Originals concerts at Town Hall, where they invite people who originated a role on Broadway back to sing their song. So he asked if I would come sing the Joseph songs, and I did, and I met a fantastic music director that night, John Fisher, who played for me, and he and I hit it off, and I talked to him backstage and said, you know, I've always wanted to do my own cabaret show. And he's like, well, let's do it. And we've just become the best of friends, and we just kind of got started. It all just kind of very organically happened from that one concert. My good friend Julia Murney was supposed to do Broadway on the Boardwalk concert that she wasn't able to do, and she gave them my name, and I had to have 6 songs prepared for that, and that was kind of the start of my own show. And it really was something that I've wanted to do for like 20 years and just never kind of knew the path to take to make it happen. And I was either doing theater myself or not doing any of it, and but it all came together. And then so I made my New York City cabaret debut in June of 2014 at 54 Below, blessed with a sold-out show. And so it's been less than a year and a half since then. And, like, truly, I don't for a minute want to sound like I'm bragging or being, you know, I'm not one of those show-offy kind of performers, but I am filled with gratitude at this point in my life. And in the less than a year and a half since that occurred, I have sung with 3 symphonies. I sang on the Today Show.
Yes, you did.
I've done 25-plus concerts at 54 Below. I've been reunited with Stephen Schwartz and gotten to do a bunch of different things with him. I have one coming up in a couple weeks with him. It's just been amazing. And it's a bit of a challenge to have the kids still at home and that, but it's not like doing 8 shows a week.
You know? Right.
It's a little more in control of your time, and though you cannot control your 5-year-old getting out of bed when you are on a telephone call.
Do you not understand that you're Kelly Rabke? You get to brag. Like, that's something that you get to do. It's all good.
No, it's not me.
Well, can we move to our Joseph section of tonight's interview? Because we have a lot to talk about with Joseph. Are you ready for that part?
Sure, I'll try to remember it. It was quite some time ago.
I feel like it was yesterday. I mean, Kelly, what do you remember about, it seems like such a basic question, but what do you remember about getting up there that first time you were on a Broadway stage singing out to the audience? What do you remember about that?
Well, I can actually tell you, this is one of my favorite stories. I call it my Cinderella story. The first time I ever stood on a Broadway stage was actually my audition for Joseph. I was just finishing Wizard of Oz. Nobody knew who I was. My agent hadn't submitted me, nothing, but I had a friend who was working for the casting director who was casting Joseph. And she said, oh, you should see my friend Kelly, blah, blah, blah. They had a cancellation, so she put my name on the list. So I learned my two songs. I went down to the Broadhurst Theater, stood on stage, on the Broadway stage for the first time with the lights in my eye, totally like a scene out of A Chorus Line. Just, you know, one scared little girl standing on a stage and somebody in the house barking commands from the god mic kind of thing. And so I sang my two songs. They came up on stage. They brought me over to the piano, asked me to belt a few things, and then went back out and said, okay, sing it again. So I did. And I went about my day. I remember checking my answering machine because, yes, it was long enough ago that it was an answering machine, not a voicemail. I had no cell phones. I remember thinking, I think that went kind of well, but okay, no message. So when I got back to my apartment at like 5:30 that night, there was a message from my friend Liz, who was the one working for Johnson List Casting, saying, get your ass back down to the Broadhurst Theater immediately. Andrew Lloyd Webber had walked in during my audition, and he wanted to see me again.
Oh, my gosh.
So in a panic, I started running around my apartment. I was a mess. I had gone to the chiropractor because my back was a mess from carrying Toto around for 7 weeks. It was much larger than a Cairn Terrier should have been. And so I had, like, you know, had my face in a chiropractor's cradle for an hour. I was a disaster. I, like, threw a hat on my head, ran out, tried to get a taxi at rush hour. I get down there, I run in. I'm like, I'm here. And they said, well, Andrew's gone back to his apartment at Trump Tower, so we're going to take you over there for your call.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was like, okay. So we jumped in a bunch of cabs, the whole creative team, and I remember the choreographer patted me on the knee, and he said, just think of it as an adventure, dear. And we got to Sir Andrew's house, and it was it's on the 60th floor of Trump Tower, just floor-to-ceiling windows. Could totally see my house in New Jersey from there. And he brought me into the living room, shooed everybody else out into, like, a separate wing of the apartment, and had me sing my two songs again, or had me sing Pharaoh's Story, and he said, I want you to sing a Pharaoh's Story to me with your views of the recent election. So we just had a presidential election.
Yes, we did, yeah.
Bush, Perot, I don't know. So I don't know if he was, you know, trying to get to see if I could tell a story with a particular point of view, or if he was just, you know, having fun, I don't know. So I sang my songs, he brought everybody back in. I said, sing them again, I did, and he stood up and he said, well, I think I speak for everyone when I say we'd very much like for you to be our narrator. Would you like to sit down? And I said, yes, please. And he said, would you like a glass of wine? I said, yes, please. And so that was the first time I stood on a Broadway
stage. Oh, my gosh. Kelly, remember that time that you sang for Andrew Lloyd Webber in his apartment in Trump Towers? Like, that's an actual story.
I know. It's pretty crazy. That's why I say it's my showbiz Cinderella story. And I tell that in my cabaret show. Because my show is very much a personal journey kind of thing.
So Incredible. All right, I'm going to throw two dates out at you that might mean nothing to you, but I'm going to give them meaning for you. Are you ready?
Okay.
The first date is December 25th, 1993, and I will just tell you, that's the date that I saw Joseph with all the other Jews, because that's what we all did. We just went to go see Joseph, because that's the whole audience. And I will say, the rumor was, and I don't know if you're going to be able to confirm this or not, Kelly, the rumor was that Michael Damian threw up on stage that night. He ran off in the middle. Is that anything that rings a bell?
Huh. Well, it's a distinct possibility.
Okay.
I will say that we had the winter that we did Joseph, so we opened in November, and that was the worst winter in, I don't remember how many years. It was like we had 12 snowstorms between December and February or something. It was crazy. So I do remember that Michael was ill quite a bit.
Okay. So it's possible. It's possible.
It's possible, but okay. I mean, he was a trooper. He went on. I mean, he understood he got to go on a few times, and But yeah, I don't. I wish I could tell you that it was some fantastic story that I recall, but I don't.
All right, well, let me give you the other date. Let me preface this, Kelly. Kelly, the degree to which my boyfriend is obsessed with you, if you need free babysitting, if you need meals, I don't know what your needs are, Kelly, but he will be there at a drop of the hat. He is a Joseph fan that I didn't even know. Look, am I a fan of Joseph? Yes, Kelly, I enjoy you immensely. I didn't know that there's this super fandom status of Joseph. And that's
I didn't know that either.
Oh, it's if you didn't love him as I do, and I know that you would, it would be a little bit scary, but that's not where we are. So this is the story that he tells, and you tell me, you know, all we're trying to establish here, Kelly, is if these stories are possible. So we've already established for our listening audience, yes, it's possible that Michael Damian threw up that night. Story number two, December 28th, 1993, my boyfriend insists that you, Kelly Rabke, sang in the story of a boy whose dream came true and he could be you. He insists that you looked at him and he, I'm not kidding, Kelly, this is like a real story. And then he said, you know, he pointed to himself and said, me, and he insists that you, Kelly Rabke, nodded, yes, you. Is that possible, Kelly Rabke?
That is absolutely possible, because okay. I would make it a point of looking out into the audience during that prologue. I had 50 children scattered at my feet at that point. That was how the whole show started, with the narrator and her Bible and telling her Bible story. But I also would always look out into the audience and try to catch somebody's eye. So he may not be making that up.
Okay. All right. He insists, and the woman that he was at the show with grabbed his arm and said, she's singing right to you. He also insists you sang to him the rest of the show, but I think we can leave it at just the prologue there, that's maybe where eye contact happened.
Yeah, the Men's Cup is like a 1,600-seat house, so it is kind of hard to continue to make eye contact beyond that. But
I don't know.
No, thank you this very could have, much. For...
This could have been a moment, Kelly, where you have been searching for years for that muse, and it was him, and this could have been that connection. I don't know. Now, I have to tell you, we're moving away from Joseph. Now, I read that you had this part on The Young and the Restless, and the only thing that I really knew about it, Kelly, was that your character's name was Bernadette. And I was talking to my boyfriend earlier, and it turns out, and again, super fan, free babysitting, whatever you need, he said that there was like this whole narrative thread of you being on The Young and the Restless with Michael Damian that was connected to Joseph?
Yeah. So Michael's storyline on The Young and the Restless was always that he was an up-and-coming, singer, songwriter, recording artist, and they wove his real-life recording career into the soap opera. He had a lot of hits and that kind of stuff back in the,
the 90s,
we'll
say.
The 80s,
yeah.
Early 90s,
yeah.
I guess. So they wrote into the soap that Michael was doing, and it was very funny because they always said the whole entire thing. And Michael Damian doing Angela Weber's new production of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. It was like there was this copyright thing where they had to say the entire thing every time they mentioned it. But yes, so he was doing Joseph, which we had a couple little like press things that I think we all did a number once, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know.
But word on the street is he had an affair with you on the show.
Yes, I know. I did make it into the star with that. But yes, they brought me on as his co-star from Joseph, which is what I was. But instead of naming me Kelly, they named me Bernadette because I have red curly hair. So everyone can put together the pieces of where they got that. No one ever accused soap opera writers of being all that, creative. So
I love it. Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. And I have to say, my nieces and my nephews are quite big fans of Kenny the Shark.
Oh, I loved Kenny the Shark. That was one of my favorite jobs, honestly. I mean, voiceovers in general, I just love. But yeah, so Kenny the Shark was a Discovery Kids show, and I played Kat, a 12-year-old girl who has a pet shark named Kenny. And it was so much fun, and we did a couple seasons of it. And in fact, just to spoil the whole 12-year-old thing for everyone, I actually had my son while we were doing the second season of that, and there were a couple times that I had to drag my pump with me to the recording sessions so that I could... take care of business while I was there and make sure that my child was still being fed.
That's a whole different type of 12-year-old. That's a whole different show, Kelly.
It's just totally different, isn't it? Doesn't it just kind of pop the bubble of the whole Kenny Shark thing?
Again, listeners, we're here with Kelly Rabke, singer, performer, actress, Broadway star. I had friends who saw you recently do a tribute to Edie Gourmet.
Oh, yes. That was... I found that very challenging and very creatively fulfilling because that's not something that I usually do. I don't ever, propose that I'm a jazz singer, though I really, really enjoyed learning that music and getting into it, and I would like to do more of that.
There you go.
Well, the best part of that was that the night before we did our disco show called Turn the Beat Around.
Yes.
Which was seriously the most fun I've ever had on stage in my entire life. We did it back in May, and it was such a huge success that they, 54 Below, asked us to do it again. And I got to sing Cheryl Lynn's Got to Be Real, which is just one of the greatest songs ever.
Yes.
And I went from doing two shows of that the night before to singing Edie Gourmet songs the next night at 7 p.m.
Yeah, totally the same. Totally the same.
From the sublime to the ridiculous, or in this case, the reverse.
Well, you mentioned it earlier, but I was watching clips of you earlier. You sang on the Today Show a song co-written by Kathy Lee. That looked like you were having a blast.
Yeah, talk about it. You wake up one morning and in your inbox of your email is like a life-changing email that says, "Hi, my name is Carrie something or other, and I work for NBC, and David Friedman recommended you, and we were wondering if you'd like to sing on the Today Show." yes? Okay. Sure. So I had sung at the Metropolitan Room, actually for the first time, a few weeks before that, in an evening honoring David Friedman. And I sang We Can Be Kind, which is, I think, one of his most beautiful songs.
Yes.
And I met him afterwards, and he and his partner are so lovely and so supportive and encouraging, and just he's such a nice man. And so when this opportunity came up a few weeks later, he gave him my name. And the premise of this segment that they do is, I think it's once a month, it's called Everyone Has a Story, something like that.
Okay.
Everyone Has a Story. And people will write in about, an obstacle they've overcome in their life or something going on. For this particular one, it was a young woman, around age 30, she was diagnosed with uterine cancer.
Mm.
Obviously did not expect to ever be able to have children, had met this guy while all this was going on. Cut to, they're now married, and they had frozen her eggs, she found a surrogate, and they have a six-month-old son.
Okay.
And the husband's name is Will, and the baby's name is Will. So the song that Kathy Lee and David wrote is called Where There's a Will, There's a Way.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
So oh, beautiful.
It was an amazing experience. It really was.
Well, everybody's got to check that out online. Well, Kelly, if you have a minute, we put together a little game for you to play because we wanted to give you the opportunity to win some This Show Is So Gay magnets to put on your fridge there in New Jersey. You ready to play?
Of course.
Okay. So we have come up with six Joseph-related questions. I'm not worried about you with this quiz at all. Also, you should keep in mind that in 7 years of doing this show, no guest has ever lost one of these quizzes. So don't worry, Kelly. You will win the magnets.
That is the first time for everything. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready.
And yours are even all multiple choice. Some of them a little bit difficult, but I'm not too worried. All right. So, Kelly, you have to get 4 out of 6 questions right to win the magnets. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. Question number one. Kelly Rabke, which of these was not the name of one of Joseph's brothers? You ready?
I'm ready.
Levi, Judah, Solomon, or Gad?
Solomon.
That is the correct answer, Kelly Rabke. One down, only 3 more to go. I'm not worried. I am not worried. This is an interesting one. I'm a little nervous about this one, but I think it's going to be okay. By the way, if you didn't know this, Kelly, there are like hundreds of Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat quizzes out there. So I was able to just pick questions. It was super fun. Here we go. Question number 2. What was the name of the pharaoh? Ramses the First, Ramses the Second, Seti the First, or Anubis?
Huh.
I know, right? Because there's a little toss-up-y on this one.
Well, it's one of the Ramses.
Yes.
I don't know if it's the first or the second.
That's what I was nervous about.
I'm going to go with the first.
That is the correct answer, Kelly. Very good. I know.
Pressure.
I know. Two down. You're good. This one, next one, is right in your wheelhouse. I could not be less worried about this one. Question number three, Kelly. What does the narrator, and by the way, that's you, tell us that we all do a lot of in the prologue? Is it sleep, talk, dream, or work?
Dream. Oh. I didn't need that one.
I shouldn't even have given you that one. I'm not. But you understand that now that you have three right, I'm not giving you multiple choice for the next one because you just got a little cocky on that last one.
Oh,
here we go.
See, I should just speak not until spoken to. What's that saying?
Whatever it was, you should have done it. Question four, there are no multiple choice for this, but you still got it. This is the one to win, so I'm not worried. In Any Dream Will Do, which direction is the dawn breaking?
Wait, now I gotta remember lyrics from 20 years ago.
Time is running out for Kelly Rabke, whose cockiness on question three has caused this current predicament.
Seriously cost me. The dawn would break in the east.
That is correct. You have gotten four right. I got a little bit worried on that one. Do you want to do the last two just for the sake of it?
Yes.
Okay. This one, I don't even know. I guess it's in the song. I didn't know this one at all. So I'm feeling like you need one to get wrong just so you can be a little bit humble. But maybe you're going to get it right. We'll see. Question number five. In Potiphar, what chapter of Genesis does it tell you about Potiphar's wife? Here are your answers, 59, 39, 29, or 49.
Oh, God, I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, I didn't either. The correct answer is 39. 39, huh. Yes.
Okay.
And then this one, question six, and I think you're going to get five correct on this one because this is all you. Question six, in Pharaoh's Story, sung by you, Kelly, what should we all be doing when Pharaoh cracked a joke? Do we roar? Do we giggle? Do we chortle or do we laugh?
We chortle.
That's what we do, ladies and gentlemen. Kelly Rabke, a winner on this week's edition of the quiz. Very good, Kelly. Going to get you magnets. It's so exciting. So exciting.
It's pretty exciting. And I know we chortle because my music director chortles every time I sing that line.
I love that line. So I don't know if you heard this, but on Monday, November 2nd, there at the Metropolitan Room, you are doing a show, No Place Like Home. Tell us what we can expect.
Well, it is my debut cabaret show, which I did a little over a year ago at 54 Below, and I'm very, very excited to do it at the Metropolitan Room. It's a very personal show for me. It kind of tells my story of where I got started, hence the name No Place Like Home, since Wizard of Oz was my big break.
Yeah.
And just kind of tells a little bit about the roller coaster ride that was my journey, and then how I left performing and found my way back, and how that is home too.
I love it. Last question, little bit of the learning annex with Kelly Rabke. For our listeners out there who are just pursuing their dreams, who are encountering those obstacles and, you know, want to make it, want to be the performers, want to get their voices out there, what advice do you have for them?
Well, I think, I mean, as corny as it sounds, as if I'm quoting something from Joseph, I do think you have to follow your dreams. I mean, you know, you have to want it so badly to put up with all the nonsense and the, as I've said before, the roller coaster ride that is the business. But if it's what you love, how can you not give it a try?
Yeah.
You know, and you need to be the best that you can be. I mean, you need to study. There's an awful lot of talented people out there. And you need to be the biggest triple threat you can possibly be. And one of my favorite quotes is, luck is a combination of preparation meeting opportunity. So when opportunity knocks, you better be prepared. But you know, you also need that opportunity to come along.
Yeah.
You can be prepared as you want. And if Andrew Lloyd Webber hadn't walked into my audition that day, you know, my story would be different right now. So.
Whether real or metaphorically, you never know when Andrew Lloyd Webber is going to want you to perform for him in his living room in Trump Towers.
Truly.
Exactly. Kelly, I have to tell you, you are just such a life force up on the stage. I actually, you know, I was so fortunate to grow up in New Jersey and be able to have access to so many Broadway shows and have access to parents who took us to so many Broadway shows. And that was such a huge moment to see you up there and just take the energy from you, because you really are just this pure, beautiful energy on stage. I'm so thrilled that you have all of these things coming up. All of our listeners need to stroll on over to kellyrabke.com. We will link to it. You can learn more about Kelly. You can watch clips. You can find out what's coming up. Kelly, what an absolute treat to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Some folks dream of the wonders they'll do before their time on this planet is through. Some just don't have anything planned. They hide their hopes and their heads in the sand. Now I don't say who is wrong, who is right, but if by chance you're here for the night, then all I need is an hour or two to tell the tale of a dreamer like you. We all dream a lot. Some are lucky, some are not. But if you think it, want it, dream it, then it's real. You are what you feel. But all that I say can be told another way, in the story of a boy whose dream came true. And it could be you.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, so much time left on this week's episode, so let's talk about the latest LGBT news that's out there in the world. In the state of New York, for the State University of New York, SUNY, gender no longer just means man or woman. Students who register at SUNY campuses can now choose from 7 options when giving their gender and 8 for sexual orientation under a policy enacted this week by the SUNY Board of Trustees. When it comes to gender, a student can self-identify as a man, woman, trans man, trans woman, gender queer / gender fluid, questioning or unsure, or they can simply write in another identity. And then for sexual orientation, students can choose from straight, gay, lesbian, bisexual, pansexual, queer, questioning or unsure. And under sexual orientation, they too have the option of writing something in. Governor Cuomo said this, quote, "With this new diversity, equity, and inclusion policy, we are once again sending a strong message that the Empire State is a national leader and a beacon of inclusion for all students." So exciting there in the SUNY system that they are opening up so many different options for students to state their identity in a way that just feels more authentic to them. Of course, things like this, not without their detractors. Reverend Jason McGuire, the executive director of New Yorkers Family Research Foundation, he called the policy a, quote, "dangerous precedent." He said this, quote, "As a culture, how dare we run from truths we've understood for thousands of years? There are gender differences. People can identify as any number of things, but you are born with a certain sexual identity. You are born a certain sex," end quote. It would seem to me that Reverend Jason McGuire, the executive director of New Yorkers Family Research Foundation, really has no concept of gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, none of that. So I would recommend that Jason McGuire, Reverend Jason McGuire of the New Yorkers Family Research Foundation, do a little Googling. just do a little Googling, look up the genderbread person. It is not without its flaws, but it's a great representation that will explain to him the difference between gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, and biological sex. Those are actually four different things. And I have to say, if you're listening to this and you do not feel like you can, on a moment's notice, explain the difference between gender identity, gender expression, biological sex, and sexual orientation, that's one of those things that we all need to be able to do at a moment's notice. The genderbread person is a really simplified way of looking that up and understanding it in a little cartoon, but it's a great way to start, particularly if you're not able to make those distinctions. We have to be better allies. And one of the ways that we have to be better allies is not just being able to talk about what it means to be lesbian and gay, but also what it means to be bisexual, what it means to identify as transgender, being able to say, yes, this is the difference between gender identity, what's going on in our heads, and gender expression, what we put out there to the world or how other people perceive us, and how that is disconnected from sexual orientation, and how biological sex is actually something different than both of those. So if you need to join Reverend Jason McGuire, the executive director of New Yorkers Family Research Foundation, in looking up the genderbread person and understanding the difference between these, go do it. Go do it. We have to be better allies. In Arkansas, the residents of Fayetteville, Arkansas, they put civil rights protections for LGBT people to a vote. But unlike this vote that they had last December that we covered, supporters of non-discrimination policies were victorious, according to the final tally. From the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality, they said in a statement, quote, "Today, the people of Fayetteville voted for acceptance over fear and showed that cities can ensure religious freedom while protecting the rights of each and every citizen. People from all walks of life chose to lead Fayetteville and Arkansas toward a more inclusive future. History will remember this as a proud moment when business, religious leaders, and everyday citizens work together to unite our community, grow our economy, and finally move Fayetteville forward." According to the final but unofficial results from the Washington County Election Commission, the result was 7,666 in favor and 6,860 against, or 53% to 47%. The total vote was almost identical to the December vote, but with almost a 1,300 vote swing in preference. The turnout was 29%, which isn't so bad as someone who used to work with votes and voter turnout. According to the Election Commission, 14,593 residents of the 49,634 registered voters in Fayetteville voted in this special election. And Kyle Smith, who is the For Fayetteville campaign chairman, said this, quote, "I am really impressed to see our community come together after the divisive 119 fight and pass Ordinance 5781. So, very exciting. In February of 2015, the Arkansas legislature passed a religious freedom bill that prevents cities and counties from protecting the civil rights of LGBT people despite a national outcry. Fayetteville, with this vote, is now the fifth municipality to pass an inclusive ordinance as a challenge to that legislation. So there you go. In Arkansas. I'm actually going to Arkansas in November. I've never been to Arkansas. And I have these like gut reactions, which I try to resist, where I've stereotyped an entire state because they have such a history in random places in Arkansas of not being LGBT friendly. I'm not going to Fayetteville. Kind of wish that I were now. But there are LGBT supportive people in Fayetteville. There are LGBT-supportive people in Arkansas who are fighting like crazy to make their state even more LGBT-friendly. So I'll be going to Arkansas in November, and I'm a little bit more excited now just because of this story there in Fayetteville. This week was the Republican national debate for the presidency. It was the second debate. And Kim Davis, who I'm really not going to give much time on this week's episode, because if you look at trending over LGBT issues, Kim Davis is at the top of every single one of those trending lists, which is just extraordinarily depressing because there's so much else going on. But Republican presidential hopeful Rick Santorum, he compared Kim Davis, the Kentucky clerk who has refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, he compared Kim Davis to a young woman murdered in Columbine 16 years ago. This is so nutty. This is what happened this week on Wednesday in the GOP debate. Santorum said Davis is like the teen who was reportedly mocked for her Christian faith and shot after refusing to rebuke God. So it's actually unclear who Santorum was referring to. Several Columbine victims, including Rachel Scott and Cassie Burnell, were alleged to have stood up for their faith in the face of the gunman. Eyewitnesses, however, have called this story into question, yet it's persisted for many years. It's a little bit urban legend. It's not exactly sure if it's actually a story, but regardless, this is what Santorum said during the debate, quote, 16 years ago, this country was tremendously inspired by a young woman who faced a gunman in Columbine and was challenged about her faith and refused to deny God. We saw her as a hero. Today, someone who refuses to defy a judge's unconstitutional verdict is ridiculed and criticized, chastised, because she's standing up and not denying her God and her faith, end quote. I would like to again take this opportunity. I don't want to talk about Kim Davis that much, but it is not about ridiculing and criticizing and chastising someone because she's standing up and not denying her God and her faith. She's being ridiculed and criticized and chastised. It's really about, you know, being criticized because I'm not a fan of the ridicule. I don't like ridicule. We don't need to be talking about her hair. Please stop talking about her gender. Don't talk about her looks. That's not the point of the story. That demeans us, my LGBT and ally brothers and sisters, when we mock a woman for her looks or anything else that's connected to her gender. That's not why she's being criticized. It's not because she's standing up and not denying her God and her faith. It's because she's actually not doing the job that she was elected to do. I am not the first to say this. I won't be the last to say this. There's nothing radical in what I'm putting out there. I just want to remind everyone, please, please stop mocking her for her gender or for her looks. Okay? There we go. So that's it for Kim Davis and Rick Santorum's name-checking of her. Michael Sam. Let's talk about Michael Sam for a second. So Michael Sam, the first out football player, he was drafted and then things didn't go too well for him, which wasn't great. And then they were alleging that things weren't going too well for him because he was gay and that's why he wasn't making it on the team. And then he wasn't picked higher in the draft. And then after he wasn't on a major league NFL team, he was went down to whatever they call the AAA for football teams. And people were saying, well, that's because he's gay. And then Michael Sam, about a month ago, said, you know what, I need a break from football. He was tweeting that he needed some, you know, time to address his mental health, which, gosh, we love when anybody takes the time to put out there, you know what, my mental health is extraordinarily important to me, and this is something I'm going to attend to. Well, Michael Sam now says that he is heading back to the University of Missouri for graduate school this time. He tweeted, "So I got admitted to University of Missouri grad program this week." He played football for the University of Missouri as an undergrad until he graduated in December of 2013. He did not specify what he'll be studying when he returns to the school. He noted, however, that he plans to train to get back to football during his time there. He said this in another tweet, "I enrolled in grad school this fall to further my education while I train to get back to football." So it's very exciting. I like seeing people go to grad school. I think grad school, if it's something that will help you out, is a great thing as someone who is, you know, the director of a grad program. So kudos to Michael Sam, who is attending to his mental health, who is going to be going to grad school. Yay, Michael Sam. A teenager in South Carolina is finding herself at odds with administrators at her high school after reportedly being suspended. She was suspended for wearing a lesbian-themed t-shirt. Brianna Popor, who is a student at Chesney High School, she told a local CBS affiliate, WSPA, that she was told she needed to change her t-shirt, which was emblazoned with the words, quote, "Nobody knows I'm a lesbian." She was told she either needed to change her shirt or to go home. School officials, she said, argued that the shirt was offensive and distracting and hence violated the school's dress code. She is 18 years old. She was ultimately sent home, and she said she has not been addressed by the school administrator, who she did not name since that t-shirt confrontation. The student came out as a lesbian 2 or 3 years ago. She received a lot of support from her family, friends, and classmates. She said it wasn't the first time she'd worn the t-shirt to school. The Chesney High School student's handbook prohibits clothing deemed, quote, distracting, revealing, overly suggestive, or otherwise disruptive, but it makes no mention of items that reference sexual orientation. School officials have yet to comment to media regarding the story. This student feels that her suspension has greater implications for the school's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender student population. She said this, quote, "Isn't that what school is supposed to teach you? To be happy with who you are? Maybe people will be more comfortable showing who they are because you should be able to wear what you want to wear." For now, however, she is not backing down, and she insists that she won't be making any wardrobe adjustments. She said, quote, "Today I wore a shirt that says, keep calm and kiss girls." So it doesn't seem like she was suspended for that, but she's going to continue to push the envelope there, and kudos for her. We like 18-year-old activists. That's a great thing. You can do it in whatever way that you want. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. In the NHL, in the National Hockey League, NHL players are overwhelmingly ready to accept an openly gay teammate, according to a new survey of players on each of the league's 32 teams. During the recent NHL Players Association media tour to preview the upcoming season, USA Today asked 35 players if they would welcome a gay teammate. 34 out of 35 said that they would. The survey is the latest indication that the NHL players are ready to make the league a hospitable environment for openly gay athletes. A 2006 Sports Illustrated questionnaire found that 80% of the league's players would accept a gay teammate, the highest rate in any of the four major North American sports leagues. And while the NHL has never had a player who was publicly known to be gay, a 2010 poll from ESPN's The Magazine found that 42% of NHL players believe they have played with a gay teammate before. So again, there's this disparity here between 80% of the league's players saying they would accept a gay teammate, but only 42% of NHL players believing that they have played with a gay teammate before, which means that if there was indeed a gay teammate, and not just these NHL players, hockey players believing in stereotypes and that someone was gay even though they possibly weren't gay, so allowing for that, the other implication is that there were gay players in the NHL, which if you're going with the odds, you would think so, but that there wasn't a hospitable climate there, and so those hockey players were not comfortable coming out. The NHL has directly partnered with the You Can Play Project, an advocacy group that promotes equality in sports since 2013. You Can Play was co-founded by Patrick Burke, an NHL employee and the son of Calgary Flames general manager Brian Burke. All 32 teams have had a You Can Play representative on their roster, and this summer, the champion Chicago Blackhawks sent the Stanley Cup to Chicago's Gay Pride Parade for the second year. How exciting is that? The Stanley Cup and the Gay Pride Parade. Though Brian Burke told USA Today he was disappointed by the one player who voted differently from the rest, which, by the way, it's 34 to 35. I'm good with that. I'm good with that there was just one player who was not okay with it. He did say this, quote, "I think the survey says a lot about our players. I think it says a lot about how far society has come in this area." So there you go. A lot of progress there in the National Hockey League. There is a really cool story that's coming out of Manchester, England, and it's a BuzzFeed story, so you know it's mostly told in pictures. So you can see pictures. There's a picture of a young man, a 21-year-old, with his sister, an 11-year-old. It says, "This is Joseph Flinders with his sister, Lola. He's a radio producer from Manchester. Yesterday, after Lola told him a boy at school had said it was disgusting that she had a gay brother, Flinders posted this open letter to the boy on Facebook. He included the photo of himself with his sister, and this is a 21-year-old, and this is what he wrote. He wrote, quote, an open letter to the odious little toad. I love this letter. I'm reading it in its entirety because it just puts a good feeling in all of us and a smile on our faces. An open letter to the odious little toad who gave my baby sister a hard time for having a gay big brother. I just wanted to give an example of what a decent upbringing looks like. This is a photo I took of us at a gay pride parade, which she asked to attend with me. I think that's pretty cool of an 11-year-old, don't you? I've never known such an accepting, compassionate, loving child, and I don't want your hate-filled existence making her any less than she is. I'm not confrontational, but this is a nerve I wouldn't touch if I were you. Thankfully, you're a dying breed, and I imagine this is the last generation that'll have to endure narrow-minded tools. I think she's pretty great, and she's prouder than ever to tell people her brother is gay, so enjoy spreading hate to nobody that gives a toss." I love that. And so he put this out there, and it's gone completely viral, and it's really nice. It's really nice. I love the sentiment. Thankfully, you're a dying breed, and I imagine this is the last generation that'll have to endure narrow-minded tools. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. I hope that that's true. I hope that as generations go forward, we really are going to be dealing with this less and less. And indeed, All research points to that because there are more and more out people, and that's a great thing. That is a great thing. In Boston, Massachusetts, a gay Boston lawyer is planning to sue his insurer for allegedly denying him long-term care coverage because he takes the HIV-blocking drug Truvada. This is a fascinating story, let me tell you, listeners. So we are talking about Truvada. We are talking about PrEP. The 61-year-old lawyer who filed a complaint this week with the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination, a precursor to filing a lawsuit, claims that Mutual of Omaha discriminated against him because he is gay. The man, identified only as John Doe in the complaint, said he wants to ensure that people taking Truvada, PrEP, can get long-term care insurance, which covers extended care services for people with chronic illnesses. He also wants to ensure that people aren't deterred from taking Truvada because they fear they will be discriminated against. The man, speaking on the condition of anonymity, said this, quote, "I was shocked. I really was. I thought maybe they misunderstood me. I'm HIV negative. I'm not HIV positive. I was simply taking Truvada as a prophylactic." End quote. A spokesman for Mutual of Omaha declined comment on the complaint, citing the company's practice on not commenting on potential litigation. Bennett Klein, the director of the Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders AIDS Law Project, which represents the man, said that denying long-term care coverage to Truvada takers is nonsensical. He said this, quote, "It's really based on the stereotypes and the fears that are out there that somehow gay male sexuality is inherently risky and unhealthy. We have a lot of bias about gay male sexuality in our society." Dr. Kenneth Mayer, a Harvard Medical School professor and director of HIV prevention research at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, said it's hard to understand why an insurer would deny long-term care coverage to someone taking Truvada. He said this, Dr. Kenneth Mayer said this, quote, "The last thing we want is to discourage people from using this preventive medication. The goal is to eradicate the number of new HIV infections," end quote. So we'll keep our eyes on this lawsuit, but just put out there that all the research out there indicates that Truvada is 100% effective. That it is 100% effective, that it is right up there, that if people are taking Truvada as a means, someone who is HIV negative, as a means to prevent the spread of HIV, then indeed it is effective. So a lot of stories out there about PrEP. There's still a lot of stigmas about Truvada. So certainly, certainly, certainly educate yourself on PrEP, educate yourself on Truvada if you cannot hold a conversation about that, or if you just need to know it for yourself, if you need to know it for yourself. U.S. Representative Jared Polis, who is one of our out LGBT representatives there in the government, he's getting some blowback on remarks he made at a hearing this week to the effect that college students accused of sexual assault may merit expulsion even if they're not proven guilty. The gay congressman from Colorado said that how a college deals with such accusations is different from the process in a criminal court, where a defendant may be convicted only if proved guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. He said this, quote, "It certainly seems reasonable that a school for its own purposes might want to use a preponderance of evidence standard or even a lower standard." He said this at a hearing on campus sexual assault prevention before the House Subcommittee on Higher Education and Workforce Training. He went on to say, quote, "Perhaps a likelihood standard. If I were running a college, I might say, well, even if there is only a 20 or 30% chance that it happened, I would want to remove this individual," end quote. So he received applause at the hearing, but his remarks were later critiqued by scholars and journalists. The University of California, Los Angeles law professor Eugene Volok said this, quote, "There are certain positions where indeed a whiff of suspicion might be enough to get someone removed. I just hadn't thought that being a college student would or should be one of them. And that's especially so when the policy is defended on the ground that the students will just go to another university. The innocent expelled students would have their education badly disrupted and delayed. But the guilty students would, by hypothesis, just be at another university where they'll be able to attack their class. Classmates, just a different set of classmates. So I bring this up because there are, look, for those of you who don't work on a college campus, and I would imagine that a majority of our listeners don't work on a college campus, I have never done anything in my career other than work on a college campus. You really have to educate yourself on what's going on college campuses with regard to sexual misconduct. It is without question the biggest issue on college campuses that administrators have absolutely no idea what to do about. I actually had surgery a few weeks ago, and so I had to stay home last week and just chill out and get better and get back on my feet. And one of the things that I did during that time, I watched a movie, you can rent it on Netflix, called The Hunting Ground. Why, when I was recovering from surgery, I didn't watch something more upbeat? Look, we will never know why I do some of the things that I do. We will never know. But in this instance, I watched this movie about documentary about how colleges really have absolutely no idea what they're doing to address sexual misconduct. And it's not just about situations that involve a man and a woman. It's also about LGBT students who are involved in sexual misconduct. There was a Huffington Post piece that I was interviewed for a few months ago that was all about, colleges barely know what they're doing to handle sexual misconduct in a really healthy way or in a way that reflects any type of social justice or just justice in general. And then beyond that, if you throw in a sexual misconduct case that involves two individuals of the same sex or involves an individual who identifies as transgender, it falls apart even further. So that wasn't the focus of this movie, The Hunting Ground, but I truly encourage you, if you do not know what's going on at your local university or your alma mater, just ask them, hey, how do you handle sexual misconduct complaints? What's the process look like? This is what it means to be a great ally, my friends. Ask them, hey, does your policy cover LGBT individuals? Are your panels trained to deal with LGBT individuals? Is there any difference if an LGBT individual steps forward, or are they going to have to be put in a position where they have to explain what it means to be LGBT? Which sadly is the case in any number of situations on college campuses. So the theme of this second half of this episode of This Show Is So Gay is to educate yourself, whether you are looking up that gender-bred person, whether you are doing more research on PrEP, on Truvada, or whether you are looking at the school from which you graduated or your local university on how they handle LGBT sexual misconduct cases. This is how you use your voice more effectively. You get more information. And that's all the news that we have for this week. Our huge, huge thanks to Kelly Rabke. You know, it's not always that we have allies on this show. We tend to focus on individuals who identify as LGBT. I would say in 320-something episodes, we probably only had a handful of folks who didn't identify as LGBT. And yet, there are folks who are working to support the LGBT community. I didn't get to anywhere near half the questions that I had for Kelly Rabke. And she's done so much work for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. We didn't even go there. We didn't even talk about LGBT appreciation for Broadway. But you can sure as heck bet that I want to get Kelly Rabke back on the show, because as you heard in the first half of the show, I love her. She's the best. Defining moment for me seeing her as a young teenager in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And yes, it seems that Michael Damian did indeed throw up on stage, or at least it's possible. That's what Kelly said. That's what I heard. My thanks, of course, to Kelly Rabke, and of course, even more to you guys for listening. Get out there. Go educate yourself. Go do whatever it is that you need to do to raise up the voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Are you scared? You've got nothing.